Well, in this fifth chapter of Matthew, the Lord Jesus is going to bring us, just very briefly, a short comment on the issue of divorce. Now, it's worth noting that this isn't, of course, a comprehensive thesis that Jesus is teaching here. But nevertheless, I think you might find that this verse is fuller than it might at first appear to be. And there's some supplementary reading that you can always do in the New Testament. We'll be referring to one passage, which is where Jesus expands on this theme in chapter 19 of Matthew's Gospel. And those of you that have been through the series in 1 Corinthians, you'll recall that in chapter 7, where the apostle deals with the issue of marriage and he addresses the issue of unnecessary and wrongful divorces that were taking place within the Corinthian church, the apostle Paul there gives us some fuller teaching on the issue also. But here it's just in these two short verses that Jesus mentions this particular theme. And I want to ask you, first of all, to remember the context in which Jesus is speaking as he brings this instruction about divorce, because it's very helpful always to remember the context in which the verse is set. Jesus has laid out before us the character of the Christian believer in verses 3 to 10. And he's now going to flesh out what it actually means to have that kind of character and live in the world. So he's talked about the kind of contrast that there ought to be in the Christian. They are to be as salt and light in this dark and sinful world, verses 13 to 16. And true living in the light of God's law and the true nature of righteous living is something that he refers to in verses 17 to 20. Don't be like the Pharisees. The Pharisees were self-righteous. We have this set of rules. We've kept them. We're okay. Jesus says you're to have a righteousness, but not that type of righteousness. And Jesus is refuting and rejecting publicly the beliefs and the teachings of the Pharisees that pleasing God is simply a matter of a full outward keeping of God's law. And Jesus is rejecting that and saying, no, they've got it completely wrong. Rather, it's all about having the basis of God's law implanted into your heart. That's what it's about. On account of our loving him with all our heart and soul and mind and strength. And it's because of that relationship founded upon love that we long to keep God's law. We love his word. We love his commandments. And that's the nature of the Christian's living and relationship with God that Jesus is talking about here as he goes through the Sermon on the Mount. And these two verses this evening are the third of six paragraphs where Jesus says, you've heard that it was said, but I say to you. And Jesus is correcting the wonky understanding and the false teaching of the Pharisees with regard to the law. And he's giving us a proper spiritual evaluation and interpretation of what the law of God is all about. And to do that, he's selecting various examples and showing how the Pharisees, on the one hand, were getting it so terribly wrong, and what it should mean for us as Christian believers. And so this is number three of six examples that he's bringing throughout chapter 5. Verse 31. Furthermore, it has been said, and he's quoting from the Old Testament law, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason, except sexual immorality, causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. And although there doesn't, on the face of it perhaps, seem to be an awful lot there, actually, Jesus is saying a huge amount for us to take on board this evening. We need to bear in mind as we begin to consider this, in terms of the language that's used there, it talks about someone divorcing his wife, give her the certificate of divorce. It talks about divorcing his wife for any reason, causes her to commit adultery. Do bear in mind that in Bible times, it was a very male-dominated society, and it was the men who divorced their wives, not the other way around, in Bible times. Now, in 21st century Britain, men and women are seen as equal in the law in these kinds of things now, and so it works either way round. It's also worth reminding you that, having said that, God holds husbands accountable for what happens in their households, nevertheless. But Jesus begins in verse 31, and he's referring back to that passage that Ben read for us from Deuteronomy 24. So it might be an idea just to turn there for a second again and just ask ourselves, well, what did that teach? Because Jesus is referring to it. You've heard it was said. And what he's saying to the Pharisees is, well, this is what the law says, but you've got it wrong. You're misunderstanding the law. You're misinterpreting the law. And I want to explain what it really means. So what did God teach in Deuteronomy 24? Well, first of all, can I just point out, there's no mention of adultery in those verses. There's no mention of sexual immorality in those verses. You see, in Bible times, at the time when Deuteronomy 24 was written, if someone was found to be an adulterer, they were stoned to death. And that was the end of it. And so the offended husband or wife, the one who had been the innocent party, they were immediately widowed. And so their marriage had ended. And they were free to remarry if they wished. Because the adulterer was stoned to death in Old Testament days. So, what is causing divorce in the Old Testament? Well, it's certainly not things as serious as adultery, because the law had a very serious way of dealing with those kinds of sins in marriage. So we have people in the Old Testament, actually, just as we found in our studies in Corinthians in the New Testament, and as we find all around us today, people who were getting divorced for any number of reasons. All manner of reasons they were getting divorced for. And I want to point out that in Deuteronomy 24, God isn't introducing divorce. It's already happening. Divorce is already being practiced. Men are already abandoning their wives for whatever reason they choose. And Deuteronomy 24 is actually bringing order and trying to regulate what is chaos. And it's trying to reduce the impact of the divorce that's already taking place in that society. And it's to remind people that these things are not to be taken lightly. Men were divorcing their wives for any reason they wished. And because of that, many women were being abused and simply abandoned. And now, what was an abandoned woman to do in Bible times? Indeed, in some countries today, what is an abandoned woman to do? There's no benefit system, no welfare system to fall back upon. How would she fend for herself? Who would take care of her? And God in Deuteronomy 24 is trying to bring some degree of order and regulation where there is currently chaos within the people. And he's just laying down some basic guidelines so that the people can conduct themselves in a better manner. Now, the passage that I mentioned earlier on in chapter 19 of Matthew's Gospel, Jesus expands things a little bit more than he does in chapter 5. And Jesus makes it very clear the reason why these laws were introduced into the Old Testament. So in Matthew 19, we read these words. They said to Jesus, "Why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away?" Now, please note, Moses did not command people to get divorced. What he did do is say, if you're getting divorced, you have to issue a certificate of divorce. It has to be regulated and made more orderly than it currently is. So God did not command people to get divorced. He simply commanded that certificates are to be issued if they get divorced. Why? Verse 8 of Matthew 19. Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. And so Jesus makes it very clear that this is not how God would have it be. But simply because of your utter sinfulness and because you are incapable in your sins of sorting out the problems that cause divorce, and we see that all around us, don't we? People just do not have it within them if they're without Christ to sort out the problems that bring about divorce. God permits it. It's a concession from God to sinners. It ought not to be that way. But because of the nature of a sinful heart, relationships will break down. And God permits divorce. But that's not how it was in the beginning. It's not how it should be. And I'm sure every divorce brings great grief to the Lord. So it's because of the utter fallenness of our human nature that a legal ending to the marriage bond should be allowed to be put in place, but only if the man can first establish some proper justification for it. So Deuteronomy 24 didn't introduce divorce, it simply restricted it, made it more orderly. And the certificate of divorce was introduced to give some degree of protection to the woman, because men were treating divorce frivolously, but they were to do so no longer. And the certificate of divorce was final. The marriage was considered over. And the woman was free to remarry, but if she marries a second husband, she couldn't go back to her first husband. If for some reason a second marriage didn't work out. The situation in Israel, you see, was not that dissimilar to the chaos in relationships that we see in the world around us today, where marriage and commitment is scorned. Men and women have all manner and number of relationships, even going from partner to partner and back to an old partner. Family life is almost non-existent for some people. Society fragments, and we have become broken Britain. Even the politicians can recognize that we are broken Britain. They don't understand the reasons. They would if they read their Bibles. But we are broken Britain, because we are just like the children of Israel in Deuteronomy 24. We're a shambles of what we should be. But the scribes and the Pharisees, they've taken what this says in Deuteronomy 24 and they've turned it on its head. That's the problem. Deuteronomy 24 is designed to rein in the problem that exists, to esteem marriage once more, and to drastically reduce the number of couples who are separating. That was its design. But the scribes and the Pharisees, well, they've just turned it all upside down. They read it as being an encouragement to find fault with your wife, and a command to divorce her as soon as you do. They saw uncleanness that it mentions in Deuteronomy 24 as anything that the husband's not happy about. And any man who was not happy with his wife would simply deem her to be unclean, would write out the certificate of divorce, and as long as they've got the certificate to prove it's all above board, then that's absolutely fine. It's the certificate that's important, you see. That's what Moses was talking about in Deuteronomy. You've got to have the piece of paper. As long as you've got the piece of paper, everything's fine. That's the kind of righteousness the Pharisees lived by, that Jesus says we're not to. And that's what Jesus is tackling head on. On the news the other day, there was an article about local councils who are wanting to clamp down on people who use those blue badges for disabled parking in their cars illegally. Some people are getting hold of forged ones, and many people are just using a relative's blue badge. And, the thing is, you see, there's a blue badge. The fact that it might be a forgery doesn't matter. It's a blue badge. I can park here. The fact that this actually belongs to my gran doesn't matter. Blue badge in the windscreen. I can park here. Thank you. And that was the Pharisees' attitude to divorce, you see. And we can understand where the Pharisees are coming from, because we see exactly the same attitude in people all around us. And we actually know there's a lot of that inside ourselves, isn't there, if we're really honest? So easy for us to do that. Well, that makes it okay. That makes it legal, even though we know it's not. And that's how the Pharisees treated the certificate of divorce. That's what they had reduced righteousness to. And so Jesus challenges them head on. It has been said, says Jesus, you're absolutely right, it has been said, but I say to you, now listen. And he punches them in. Whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. Now, this was shattering to the Pharisees. What? Whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality? But what about the certificate? Doesn't matter. What was the reason? Why did you do it? Now, why does Jesus focus on sexual immorality? Notice he doesn't say adultery. He doesn't use the word for adultery. Even in the original Greek, it's not the word that's used for adultery. It's the word that's often translated fornication, which can actually be used to describe any kind of sexual immorality. So why does Jesus focus on that issue? Well, it's for this reason, and he highlights it again in Matthew 19, and he actually mentions it specifically in Matthew 19. Marriage is all about two becoming one flesh. That's what's at its heart. There's supposed to be a permanence about marriage. There is a mystical union in marriage. Husband and wife are to keep themselves exclusively for each other in marriage. And that's to be the bedrock of society, regardless of what today's politicians and philosophers and local authorities might think. Husband and wife, inseparably joined together, is to be the bedrock of society and family life. And that's why our marriage vows contain the words that they contain. It's about two becoming one flesh. But it is possible, of course, that either the husband or the wife might break that bond through unfaithfulness. And here, Jesus uses the term sexual immorality. Either the husband or the wife has been unfaithful. And that actually breaks the bond. That oneness has been broken. Now, the word that's translated sexual immorality, or in some other places, fornication, is the Greek word from which we get our word pornography. A complete distortion of what it should be. That mystical union of marriage has been broken because of someone's unfaithfulness. And that unfaithfulness in itself has broken the bond of marriage. And divorce on those grounds is permitted for the sake of the grieved party. It's permitted, mind you. It's not commanded. It's permitted. And Jesus is elevating the institution of marriage. And what he's doing in this verse is he's condemning those who would take marriage lightly or treat it with contempt. He's condemning those who would want to wriggle out of marriage just for some minor inconvenience or irritation. He's condemning those who just decide one day that they need to take a new direction in their life, and I'm sorry, but my husband or my wife no longer features in my plans. He's condemning those who think it's okay to play around and treat relationships casually. He's condemning those who think that sex can be treated as a recreational leisure activity. And he's condemning these Pharisees with their holier-than-thou attitude, who, he says elsewhere, they're just like whitewashed tombs. All right to look at on the outside, but inside they're full of dead men's bones. And he underlines what he's saying by making it clear that if you divorce your wife without good cause, you are putting her in the position of adultery if she remarries. What he's saying is this: if you've got the certificate of divorce in your hand, but she actually hasn't broken the marriage bond in terms of her behavior, then it doesn't matter what the paper says. In God's eyes, she is still your wife, or he is still your husband. And if they go out and find someone else, and in Bible times, if it was a woman, she'd be destitute if she didn't, you are forcing her to commit adultery. She's done nothing wrong. She's done nothing to deserve the certificate. The bond has never been broken. But now you, by giving her a piece of paper, you are forcing her to break the bond. It's your fault. That's what Jesus is saying. And many of the Pharisees will be squirming, because there's a very good chance that many of them were guilty of this very thing. There's a very good chance that many of them had long said goodbye to wife number one, because she didn't live up to their standards. And who knows what number wife some of them may have been on. And he's saying to them, if you forced her out, you have forced her to commit adultery. It's your fault. That's how serious Jesus is taking it. And it's shocking to his hearers to hear this kind of thing being said. And he also makes it clear that the one who The one who is guilty of unfaithfulness, if they have been unfaithful, well, they're not permitted to remarry after getting divorced. But the innocent party is free to remarry. You think about it like this. If a husband or a wife have been guilty of sexual immorality, in the Old Testament, they'd be dead, so they can't remarry. The innocent party would be widowed, so they can remarry. And Jesus says that same principle carries across in a situation where there has been a legitimate divorce. The guilty party may not remarry because they're as dead. The innocent party is free to remarry because the marriage has ended. And he is kind and he is merciful to those who have truly been abused and abandoned in their marriage. And I believe that this phrase, sexual immorality, fornication, where one party in the marriage has been guilty of breaking that marriage bond because of their actions and because of what they've done, I believe that that unfaithfulness applies not only to adultery, but I believe it also applies to those who break their marriage bond through the chronic abuse of their husband or their wife. They simply are not treating them as one that they are joined to. Or they have abandoned them completely and they've just left them destitute. I believe those things also come under this heading of sexual immorality and fornication, because by their actions they have broken that bond that they signed up to in marriage. And those things are all legitimately able to be brought to divorce because the bond has been broken through unfaithfulness. Now, let me remind you that at the beginning I said we must remember the context in which Jesus is bringing all of this. So there must be a great deal of relevance for us as Christians today. Now, you might be thinking, well, I'm a Christian. My wife or my husband is a Christian. I'm never going to get divorced. Well, pray to God that you never do. And maybe you're not married, but you're perhaps thinking one day you will be. And you can't imagine yourself getting divorced. Pray that you never have to go through that experience. But that doesn't mean that we should just skip over this verse and say, well, okay, that's great, but that really doesn't apply to me. I'm never going to get a divorce. So. Well, I think it does us good just to pause and consider a few things. In the light of all this, what then would Jesus have people see in us? He's called us to be salt and light. He's called us to have a righteousness which is greater than and not the same as the righteousness of the Pharisees. So what does this teach us about that? How does this teach me to be salt and light? How does this teach me about the righteousness that I am to display to an unbelieving world? Well, let me suggest a few things. I believe that Jesus would have people see in us those who embrace that which God has instituted and which God has said is good. He would have us embrace that. I believe that God would have people see in us that selfless, self-sacrificing love for our husband or our wife. I believe that God would have people see in us commitment and a willingness to forgive and a readiness to forgive and a desire to work through and overcome our problems and our difficulties, because those of us who are married, we do have them, don't we? But they are to see in us something different to the way unbelievers deal with their problems. I believe that God would have people see in us the kind of forgiveness and bearing with one another that the world is so lacking today. I believe that Christ would have people see in us stable homes where children thrive and prosper. Even a sinful world acknowledges that that is the place where children do best, much as it grieves some of them to admit it. I believe that Jesus would have people see in us faithfulness, trust, meekness, and humility, and fidelity in marriage. That surely is at the heart of what Jesus is saying here. There is only one thing that should bring about divorce, and you are to be righteous and you are to be salt and light. Let people see what it takes not to have to get divorced on this particular issue. And remember the characteristics that we saw in the Beatitudes in verses 3 to 10. Now those things, of course, are directed towards God. But think of it this way too. Loving your wife or husband for life requires you to be poor in spirit towards them. It requires you to pursue that which is righteous. It requires you to be merciful. It requires you to be pure in heart towards each other. It means that both of you need to be peacemakers in your home, doesn't it? And that's what's lacking in the homes of unbelievers today. Although I was actually encouraged to see that the divorce rate has gone down, apparently. Maybe not many as many people are getting married, mind you. But those same characteristics that we are to have towards God, they have to be evident in our daily lives as well. And Jesus is requiring us to bring those things to bear, not only in our relationship to God, but with each other. That's what will sustain a marriage. Because you are not like the world, are you? And you're not to renege your responsibilities. And you're not to resolve your grievances and your difficulties the way the world resolves them. And you don't have a righteousness that comes from satisfying your own personal set of self-promoting, self-preserving rules. You have a righteousness that comes from being born again by the Spirit of God. And that's how you're to live in your marriage, if you're married. He would have people see in our marriages a glimpse of how Christ loves his church. He would have people see in us that God's way really is the best way. And Jesus is pouring scorn upon these self-righteous men who would so quickly discard that which God has said is so sacred to him. And he upholds and elevates marriage to the highest degree. And he says, even in your marriages and in your home life, let people see that you are salt and that you are light. Let people see that you have obtained a righteousness which is not an earthly man-made righteousness, but it is the very righteousness of God living in you, sustaining you, keeping you. Let him be seen in your home.